And we're back with Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Dennis Lehane grew up in Dorchester and writes crime novels with a voice that comes from Boston's gritty underbelly. He's the author of Gone Baby Gone, Shutter Island, and Mystic River. To that list, you can add The Drop, his latest novel about crime, cops, love, and faith set in Boston.
The novel is actually based on Lehane's screenplay for a movie which will be opening next weekend. The Drop stars Tom Hardy and James Gandolfini in his final movie role before he died. It's described as a love story wrapped in a crime story wrapped in a journey of faith, much of it set in the so-called Drop Bar.
Money changes hands all night long. And it's not the kind of money that you can deposit in a bank.
You hand over the drop.
But all that money needs to end up somewhere. They call it a drop bar. You just hide the entire city's dirty money right in plain sight.
All your money in the bag.
All right, so that's a scene from the soon-to-be-released movie The Drop. The novel is already out, and author Dennis Lehane is with us now. Welcome to Radio Boston. Great to meet you and great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And really fun to read The Drop. I've really been enjoying it the last few days. And I want to, Dennis, if it's all right, I want to invite our listeners into this conversation. Listeners, are you a fan of Dennis Lehane's writing about Boston's dark underside? And what is it about this city that inspires so much great crime writing? What's your question for Dennis Lehane? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Dennis, I'd love to start just by asking about the unusual order of how The Drop came to be. Usually there's a novel, then a screenplay. You started by trying to write a novel, which turned into a short story. From that came the screenplay, and from the screenplay came the novel.
Yeah.
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 Why
yeah.
that order? How did that work
out? Oh, God, if I knew why, I would have skipped a couple of steps. no, it started with me writing, beginning a novel in 2001, late 2001. And writing about a guy a couple of days after Christmas finding an abused puppy in a barrel.
Yeah.
And then there were other things going on in that novel, all sorts of other characters. The novel ultimately never came together. I shelved it, but I kept thinking about that guy. So then a few years later, I wrote a short story just based on that one incident. Okay,
right.
This guy finds a dog. He begins to open up because he finds a dog. He's a very repressed human being. He begins to flower. And then right at that moment, all of these other outside forces begin to come in and press in on him, not the least of which is the original owner of the dog.
Right. And so this is actually the way The Drop begins, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then that became The Drop, the movie. They asked me to adapt it. Fox came in and asked me to adapt it. I did. And as I was writing the script, there were all sorts of places, paths I went down, roads I went down that I just couldn't use that ultimately weren't going to work in a movie. So cut to a couple of years later, the movie's done, and my publisher calls me and says, well, we've been waiting 11 years. Do you think you could turn in that novel now of that story you started in 2001? And I said, that's interesting because, again, I had all of this stuff that I didn't use in the movie and all of this stuff from the original book that I would have loved to have used. So that's when I said, all right, let me see what I can come up with. And I sat down. And I revamped it again, and I said, "This basically what I can do is I can keep the structure of the film, but I can just go deeper.
Just deeper, right.
Yeah.
So did you have the screenplay sort of there beside you when you were sort of almost adding to it, filling in? I'm just trying to imagine the process.
No, what I did was I took the screenplay again, and I broke it down as an outline.
Yeah.
And then I put it all on 3x5 cards, and then I put it on a bulletin board in front of my desk, and then I worked off of that.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, I want to tell just a little bit about what this story is about. So you mentioned it begins with the protagonist, Bob. And it begins off, he's a bartender. He's involved in sort of the life, I guess, and he finds this dog who's been beat up in a trash can. It also involves his partner, Cousin Marv, played by James Gandolfini, and his in the movie, and this is his final film role before he died last year, and they end up involved with the Chechen mob after a robbery goes wrong. And among other things, it tells a story of how this world, their world, is sort of changing in a big way. They were tough guys once. They had their own kind of gang, but they're sort of out-muscled by this Chechen mob. So here's a bit of the trailer from The Drop that sort of sets up a couple of ideas. Let's listen.
Yeah, we had a crew back in the day when we was young. Marv, he thought he was a tough guy. Then the neighborhood changed. It wasn't enough to be tough no more. You know, you had to be mean.
When I walked into a place people sat up straight, they noticed. I was respected. I was feared. And that meant something.
Are you doing something desperate? Are you doing something that we can't clean up this time?
So that's part of the trailer from The Drop, starring Tom Hardy and James Gandolfini, which hits theaters next weekend and which was written by Dennis Lehane, who turned it into a novel by the same name. Dennis, I'd love it if you could tell us something about these two guys, Bob and Cousin Marv, and what they're up against, because it seems like the world is sort of shifting beneath their feet.
Yeah, the world is shifting beneath their feet. They have I think something that I investigate a lot without even knowing it, I noticed it in this book definitely, was I think I do a lot of very de facto father and son relationships, mm-hmm. not exactly natural fathers and sons. So Marv was at some point a sort of a mentor to Bob, but that was a long time ago. And the student hasn't necessarily become the teacher, but the student is no longer a student.
I see.
But the relationship is still based on that. And so Bob, Marv is under the impression that he's the boss. Marv is under the impression that Bob will do anything he asks of him. Mm. Bob has a long time since gotten off that boat. But he's a quiet guy. He keeps very much to himself. He's very shy. He's not pronouncing that he's changed, mm-hmm. but he has fundamentally changed. So when Marv starts walking down a path in both the film and in the book that could lead to an extremely dangerous outcome, Bob does not necessarily feel he has to follow him down that road,
yeah.
which is news to Marv.
They're both great roles. Cousin Marv is played by James Gandolfini. He seems perfect to me for this role. And I understand you're a big fan of that casting decision.
Yeah, it was the only casting decision that I weighed in very vehemently on, I should say. Mm-hmm. When they were considering him, I still remember one of the producers saying to me, our worry is that he's too on the nose. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know,
what does
another
that mean?
that basically it's the cliched thought.
Oh, I
that,
see.
You know, you'll just, okay, you got an aging mobster, let's hire Gandolfini. Mm-hmm. But I said, sometimes too on the nose actually should be translated as perfect because he's perfect for this part.
Yeah.
So I was a big cheerleader for him getting the part. I don't think I was the deciding factor in any way, shape, or form, but I do think my enthusiasm mattered.
Yeah.
So when he was cast, I then went back, and there were all these lines I wanted to give Cousin Marv, but I wanted to wait until I saw an actor who could handle them, and the moment he was cast, I went and I put them all back in the script.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I understand, sadly, you never got to meet Gandolfini.
We never met. We played phone tag for a little bit, and then we were supposed to meet for dinner one night with the rest of the cast, and Jimmy at the last minute couldn't make it, and he sent over, I'll never forget it, he sent over like 4 bottles of wine and with a little apology note.
Oh, boy.
It was so classy.
Yeah, really classy. You know, one of the things that I loved about reading The Drop, the novel, and what I love about a lot of your writing, and I'm thinking of Mystic River in particular, is the way you write dialogue. You do it so well. Your voices are so believable. And I think even more than the description of the action, it's what your characters say and the way they say it that makes them really come alive. And I'd love to ask you about sort of where does that come from? I mean, where do these voices come from? Are these folks you've known? Are they composites?
No. It's having grown up in a place where everybody spoke very distinctly.
Yeah.
One of the things I like to say about at least the people I grew up with is they italicized better than anybody I ever knew.
It's a great way to put it.
They knew how to hit the exact word you didn't expect in a sentence to make that sentence really hum.
Yeah.
Great storytellers. Funny, I've never met a comedian or seen a comedian half as funny as some of the guys I knew growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just that. When you grow up with that, it's like growing up in a rose garden and somebody says, where do you get your sense of smell?
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in a place where people spoke very vividly, so I got an ear.
Listeners, we're talking to Dennis Lehane. He's the author of The Drop, a novel. He's also the author of a screenplay of the film, which is about to hit theaters, also called The Drop, which is about to hit theaters next weekend. Well, speaking of your wonderful dialogue, I'd love to get you to read just a little bit about, just to illustrate what we're talking about. And there's a scene that begins here on page 155 that involves the protagonist, Bob, talking with the love interest, Nadia. They're walking the dog, Rocco. And the only thing you need to know to sort of set this up is they're talking about the first words are, who is he? And they're talking about Eric Deeds, who's a bit of a troublemaker in the film. I mean, in the book and the film.
Eric Deeds is the psychotic former owner of the dog. He's
right.
the one who abused the dog.
Right.
He's shown back into their lives. And now it's at this point, Bob is beginning to suspect that there was a history between him and Nadia,
okay.
the woman he met. So who is he? Bob asked Nadia as they walked Rocco through the park. Who is he, Nadia said, or who is he to me? The river had frozen again last night, but the ice was already coming apart in a series of cracks and moans. Rocco kept trying to place a paw on the edge of the bank, and Bob kept snapping him back. To you, then. I told you, we dated for a while. She shrugged her narrow shoulders. He's a guy who grew up on my street. He's gone in and out of prison, hospitals, too. People say he killed Richie Whalen back in 04. People say it? Or he says it. Another shrug. Amounts to the same thing. Why'd he kill Richie Whalen, Bob said. I heard he was trying to impress some hard guys down on Stoughton Street, she said. Leo's crew. She looked at him, her face a white moon under her black hoodie. That's the rumor. So he's a bad guy. Everyone's bad, she said. No, Bob said. They're not. Most people are okay. Yeah? A smile of disbelief. Yeah, he said. They just... I don't know, and make a lot of messes, and then they make more messes trying to clean up those first messes, and after a while, it's your life. She sniffled and chuckled at the same time. That's it, huh?
That's a great line, Bob's. They make a lot of messes, and then they make more messes trying to clean up those messes. After a while, that's your life. That sort of describes a lot of what happens in this book.
Absolutely. That describes a lot of what happens in this book. The thing is I think as I wrote more and more about quote-unquote criminals, I began to become less and less enamored of the sort of master criminal, because I don't know too many master criminals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, master criminal is Bernie Madoff, and in the end, he gets caught. I think most criminals are, you know, halfway looking to get caught, halfway looking to go to prison because it's mm-hmm. the only home they ever knew. They tend to be dumb people.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to write in this book about real crime, which is often perpetrated by none too bright human beings, and see where, but that doesn't mean just because you're none too bright, I guess at the end of the day, that you don't have dreams, that you don't dream of a better future, that you don't have hopes.
Yeah.
And so everybody in this book and everybody in the film really is just looking for a way to better themselves.
Right.
It's just the ways that they choose are almost guaranteed to work the opposite.
Yeah. Faith plays a big role in this book. Bob is a Catholic. He goes to Mass faithfully every day, although he doesn't take communion
because
he's got a secret that he's sort of ashamed of.
Well, it's also I wanted to look at again these changing worlds.
Mm-hmm.
There's a line about Bob. You know, when you grew up, you were defined by your parish.
Right.
Everything you needed to know came from that world. Well, he's that's all slipping away.
Mm-hmm.
It's all slipping away. His church is about to close. Nobody celebrates Little Christmas anymore, which he grew up celebrating. He's the only person who keeps saying, "What about Little Christmas?" And everybody looks at him like, "I don't even know what you're talking about." He goes to Mass, and another guy who goes to Mass is a police officer. The police officer who notices that Bob doesn't take communion later crosses paths with him over
right.
another crime. And it's because they both have different opinions on how the church handled the pedophilia crisis, that the police officer, who's much more orthodox, pray, pay, obey, he looks at Bob as Bob would be more like a voice of the faithful type of Catholic,
yeah.
and he gets insulted by what Bob's opinion is on how the church handled the scandal. So that's when he begins to sniff into Bob's life, which is the last thing Bob needs right now. So it was also a look again at a fading world. It was also a way to look at people of authentic faith, which I find fascinating. And any book that is dealing with death, I think, should ultimately be dealing with, is there something after it?
Sure. It's a great story. And we should say the novel, and we did mention this, it's set in Boston, which you know very intimately. But the movie is set in Brooklyn.
Yes.
How come?
They felt as if the producers one day woke up and decided that between myself, Ben Affleck, and Martin Scorsese, we'd played out the low-life white criminal in Boston storyline. Mm-hmm. It had been tapped out in terms of Hollywood because we'd had Mystic River, Gone Baby Gone, The Town, The Departed, even I think what really started it, although not many people saw it, it's a great movie, Ted Demme's Monument Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this run where there were all these films set in that world, and I think they just finally said, look, can we find some new ground? So they asked me to set it in Brooklyn, and I was actually living in Brooklyn working on Boardwalk Empire at the time. So I said, sure.
Yeah. And does it work? I mean, because just all these themes, I mean, faith, the parishes, the pedophilia crisis, I mean, all this sort of stuff as part of the kind of situational background of this book. It works so well in Boston. Does it work as well in Brooklyn?
Yeah, it's just as prevalent in Bay Ridge. It's just as, you know, yeah. I mean, Brooklyn and Boston are, I think, similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So it worked fine there. It would have worked in Chicago. It would have worked in Philly.
Yeah.
You know.
What is it about Boston, though, that makes it such? I mean, you mentioned that great sort of run of great stories and movies set in Boston about crime in Boston. What is it that makes Boston such a great setting for crime stories?
Well, you have a very small bit of real estate, for one. And in that very small bit of real estate, you can see basically every social group spread, you know, in a very short distance. The distance between Humboldt Ave and Beacon Street is, as the crow flies, very small.
Yeah.
And so you have it's a very interesting way to look at Boston feels like a village sometimes. Yeah. I mean, I know it's a city, but it feels like a village disguised.
Or even a collection
city.
Of villages, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's part of it. I think also, and I'm a homer, so, but I do believe this. I've traveled all over this country. I've traveled all over the world. Boston is one of the few places, certainly in this country, that I would call authentically unique.
Mm-hmm.
It's held on to its character in a way that most places don't, if they ever had it.
Mm.
Most places, Tom Wolfe said beautifully, most places now you only know you've entered into a new town by the presence of the next 7-Eleven.
Oh, boy. Well, about that, you're living in Santa Monica now, which is about as far away from Boston, I mean, obviously geographically, but also sort of in the ways that you're describing, as you can imagine. Do you find yourself needing to come back to Boston just to reconnect with that sort of authentic voice as you think about the next writing project that you're doing?
I don't feel like I have to come back. I keep a place here and always will.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, the good Lord willing, I'll be back in a few years if I can drag the wife and kids out of there. But beyond that, no, I think by this point, it's so in my blood.
Yeah.
I'm so locked in that the only thing I think I need to do is continue going on Boston.com, going on just to sort of keep up with the particular Boston stories. Like, I followed all summer. My big soap opera was your big soap. I was Arthur T or Arthur S. It was all summer.
That's quite a story.
And my mother didn't know. I mean, my wife didn't know what I was talking about, you know? And I'm like, come on, it's the Arthur T versus Arthur S story, you know? Like, and nobody cared outside of Boston, nor should they. But I did, because I'm going on Boston.com every morning. Yeah, I keep my hand in. I fly back here at least once a month. I continue to hold on to my Patriots tickets. I'll be here.
You can take the man out of Boston, but not Boston out of the man, it sounds like.
Yes.
Well, Dennis Lehane's newest novel is called The Drop, which is in bookstores now. He also wrote the screenplay for The Drop, which will be opening in theaters next weekend. Dennis Lehane, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it was really great. It was great having you.
Well, that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.